right after the international news.
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the January 14th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Let's kick off once again with African football. This evening, we continue our preview of the African Nations Championship. The 16-team tournament begins Saturday in Yaounde, Cameroon. In the opening match, Cameroon will host Zimbabwe, and that will be followed by a game between Mali and Burkina Faso. Our VOA football fans will remember the African Nations Championship, or CHAN, is for players who compete in their domestic leagues. So, for example, a member of Mali's team must play in Mali's league, and a member of Burkina Faso's team must play in Burkina Faso's league. In CHAN Group C is defending champion Morocco, Rwanda, Uganda, and Togo. These teams will play their first matches on Monday, January 18th in Douala, Cameroon. Morocco is matched against Togo, and Rwanda will play neighbor Uganda. Uganda's head coach is Jonathan McKinstry. Iron Mike Mbonye asked Coach McKinstry for his thoughts on Group C.
I think the group that Uganda find ourselves in is a very interesting group. Obviously, Morocco come in as reigning champions, and we can see from their squad that a number of players who won the tournament only a couple of years ago are returning. So there's a lot of quality and a lot of experience in there, both in terms of previous CHAN tournaments, but also in terms of the CAF inter-club competitions, where a lot of their players are playing regularly. So, you know, we know that is obviously the name, the team that people's eyes are drawn to. But even Rwanda and Togo, Rwanda, a very experienced squad. You look through the list and a number of the players, this is not their first time at CHAN. In fact, for many of them, it's their third CHAN tournament after 2016 and 2018, respectively. So a very experienced team. And in Togo, it really is, you know, a lot of enthusiasm from a strong footballing nation who have a good pedigree in football down the years on the continental level, but now competing in their first CHAN tournament. So they'll come with, you know, somewhat of an unknown quantity. We're able to know bits and pieces about their team and having done our research, but equally we know that there's a lot of things that we maybe also need to be wary of from them. So across the group, it's an interesting group. There's a lot of different styles in there. You can expect, you know, between North, Eastern and West African styles that we are going to have to meet various challenges in each of the group games. But ultimately, we feel we go in confident and strong. This is Uganda's fifth CHAN tournament, and, you know, it's important for us that we go in and put in a top performance. So, yeah, it's intriguing in terms of the opposition we'll come up against. We know that in order for us to do anything in the group, we need to be at our top level, because each team poses threats and dangers. But we also feel we have the quality that we can take advantage of the opportunities that the group presents us as well.
Uganda will play its first match against Rwanda on January 18. How prepared is the team?
The opening game between Uganda and Rwanda obviously has various layers to it. You know, it's a local derby, and Uganda and Rwanda have a long history together, both on and off the field. A lot of the players will know each other. And so going into that game, you know, with that East African sort of derby feel to it, even though we're here in Cameroon, adds an extra bit of spice to the occasion. And on top of that, again, naturally, I will be coming up against many players who worked with me when I was in charge of Rwanda a few years ago. In fact, looking down through their squad list of 30 players, I believe 18 of them played for me, and a number of them were given their debuts during my time with the Rwanda national team. So it's an interesting game. It's an emotional game for many reasons, but it's a game we feel that if we are focused and we come with our top quality, no, we can. You know, we feel it's a game that we can be successful in, but we also know that experience that's brought to bear by Rwanda, we have to be cautious of, because we're quite a young squad, and we've got a few experienced heads in there with Uganda, but overall it's quite a young squad. The majority of players have not been at CHAN before, so we've got to make sure that our talent, our youthful enthusiasm, our energy and our quality is more than enough to overcome the experience of the Rwandan team. But in order to do that, we need to be at our very best.
What's the mood of the team ahead of the commencement of the tournament?
The mood in the camp here is, you know, there's a lot of energy in it. We've mentioned before, we've brought a lot of young players as their first time playing at the continental level. And really, we approach CHAN with that in mind. You know, the purpose of the CHAN tournament is to provide a platform for young, talented players to gain exposure and not only to perform well for their nation, for their team, but also to maybe attract the attention of clubs around the world and around Africa. So, you know, we come with a lot of enthusiasm in the camp. Our preparations have largely went to plan. One or two little things, as there always is, but overall we're pleased with where we are. We came out to Cameroon early, and we've had three really good tests against Cameroon themselves, against Zambia, and against Niger. So a good mix of footballing philosophies for us to compete against in the warm-up games, and, you know, good performances from our guys, and we've made sure that everyone's got minutes on the field. So we're really honed in, and now as we approach kickoff off against Rwanda on the 18th, we feel we're well placed to push on and not just get results in the warm-up competitions, but in the CHAN tournament itself.
How many players made the team roster?
In terms of the roster, obviously there was flexibility this time round. CAF have moved away from their traditional 23-player roster, and whilst the official number is still 23, they have said because of the COVID risk associated to potentially losing players, that teams could name up to 33 players. Now, this posed an interesting sort of challenge for us as a coaching staff, because whilst you want to mitigate the risk of COVID by maybe naming a bigger squad, equally, the more players you have, the more players there are in camp not playing. Because I think we all know that any successful team, the majority of minutes are played by maybe 14, 15, 16 players. You look at any team, you look at France winning, you know, the European Championship, you look at Germany winning the World Cup, you look at Morocco winning the CHAN 2 years ago. You look at any team that's successful, and you look, they take a 23-man squad, but the majority of minutes are played by 14, 15, or 16 players. So we've decided to bring 25 players. We felt taking the extra couple gave us a few more options and a bit of extra cover should we have any outbreak in camp. But for us, the primary reason of not bringing the full 33 was we didn't want lots of players here who knew that they wouldn't really be playing, because we felt that could have a negative impact on the atmosphere in camp. Because if you don't feel you have a realistic chance of playing, then naturally your motivation maybe dips. But all the guys that we have here know that they can step on the field, and they can step on the field with our full confidence and full support, and that they can have a positive impact on the game, whether as a starting player or as a substitute. So 25 was a good number for us, and ultimately for us, even though other teams have come with 30 or 33, we just are really forthright on our COVID protocols. You know, we're trying our best. You know, the players, you know, we have, I think it's twice a week, we're talking to the players two or three times a week, the doctors, the coaching staff, on how they need to be on top of all of the guidelines and making sure they're doing everything in their power to avoid this virus, so that when we get into the games, we have maximum numbers available.
That's Jonathan McKinstry, the head coach of Uganda's national men's football team. And he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Douala, Cameroon. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
This is Jonathan McKinstry, the head coach of the Uganda Cranes national team.
Now, with a vaccine being released across the globe, we can finally see light at the end of the tunnel. But it's important that whilst that vaccine is rolled out, that we all remain steadfast and alert and adopt the guidelines that are being given out by the Ministry of Health and our various health authorities to make sure that we keep each other safe and we keep ourselves safe until we can get rid of this pandemic. Good luck and good health to everybody.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we can all help fight the corona pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and nose when we are in crowded places or areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. World football's governing body, FIFA, has released details of its investigation into systemic sexual abuse of female players in Haiti. FIFA says there were 14 alleged victims of the National Federation's president. The FIFA Ethics Committee says Yves Jean Bart allegedly raped girls as young as 14 and took habitual mistresses among players. Jean Bart was president of Haiti's Soccer Federation for 20 years until he was banned for life last October. The world champion U.S. women's national soccer team will host Brazil, Canada, and Japan in next month's She Believes Cup tournament. U.S. Soccer says the sixth annual She Believes Cup is held to inspire and empower women and girls to achieve their goals in sport and beyond. All four teams are ranked in the world's top 10, and all four teams will participate in this year's delayed Olympic women's football tournament in Japan. Because of the COVID-19 pandemic, all six She Believes Cup matches will be played at Exploria Stadium in Orlando, Florida. In the opening match on February 18th, Brazil will play Japan, and that will be followed by the USA hosting neighbor Canada.
My name is Jean Seninde with Queen's Park Rangers Women and the Uganda national team. Listen to Sunny Side of Sport with Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This is Funke Oshunaike, a professional table tennis player. I play for SC Pombero in Hamburg, Germany. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Please continue to stay safe and avoid contacting COVID-19. Thank you.
Thank you, Funke. Turning to athletics, one of the best British sprint and hurdles coaches of the modern era, Lloyd Cowan, has died of the coronavirus at the age of 58. There have been many tributes paid this week to a man who guided the British athletes, Christina Horagoo, to Olympic and World Championship gold in the 400 meters, and Andy Turner to the Commonwealth and European titles in the sprint giant hurdles. The energetic Andy Edwards in London looks back on the influence of a coach whose athletes described him as not just a good coach, he changed people's lives.
Athletics is one of the many sports where most coaches fulfill a role which can be crucial, yet with little or no financial reward. The mark of a good coach, in my view, can be just as important in developing a young person to perform better, to understand what they are doing and trying to achieve, regardless of whether the goal is an Olympic title or finding some stability in life in general. Lloyd Cowan was one of those who provided guidance in many ways. From the tributes this week, not only from British athletes and fellow coaches, but also internationally, such as Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce, the double Olympic champion in the women's 100 metres. A consistent theme is his ability to find a rapport with people, to appreciate what made them tick and work with that. His was not so much a science-based approach as one of being a highly sensitive judge of an individual. Lloyd Cowan had himself been an international sprint hurdler, selected to compete for Britain in the 1984 Olympics in Los Angeles, but having to withdraw because of illness. He began to coach locally around his home in Hackney in North London, involved in the typical British club scene of evening training sessions and local league competitions. It is from this bedrock that such as Linford Christie, the 1992 Olympic 100 metres champion, emerged, as did Jessica Ennis-Hill in the heptathlon and Dina Asher-Smith, the world 200 metres gold medalist in 2019. The story of how Cowan and Christine Ohorogu met is characteristic of the coach's influence. In 2002, Lloyd Cowan was at a local club session, and the teenager Ohorogu was a netball player, asking to join in with his group to improve her fitness. Cowan soon spotted her talent, encouraged the novice to try a race or two, and soon she was a British junior international at 400 metres, winning a bronze medal at the European Juniors. Ohorogu won the world title in Osaka, Japan in 2007, and the Olympic gold in Beijing a year later. She returned after injury to win a second world title at 400 in Moscow in 2013. She excelled away from the track as well, gaining a psychology degree at University College, London University. Like many coaches, Lloyd Cowan could have a maverick side. Christine Ohorogu reflected that she trusted him implicitly, despite his trait of never writing anything down, such as training schedules. Though he had some time as the UK's sprint coach, he didn't attend Olympic or World Championships, and yet Ohorogu said, he had this way of being the only person I would listen to.
Lloyd would say, Chris, we've just got to just get the job done. We've got to work. You don't sit and feel sorry for yourself. You don't get mad at no one. You just focus on the work. And that's how he trained me. We don't sit and feel sorry for ourselves and, you know, start shooting off our mouths and being obnoxious.
The sprint hurdler Andy Turner said the same. When his funding was cut by UK Athletics in 2008, Turner said Cowan was the one who kept faith in him. The athlete won the Commonwealth and European titles, as well as a World Championship bronze in the sprint hurdles, Cowan's old event. Let a fellow coach have the last word about the achievements and influence of Lloyd Cowan. His regular roommate on overseas trips was Tony Minicello, coach to Jessica Ennis-Hill in the heptathlon. They called their various rooms the medal factory. And Minicello explained, you need to have that maverick streak to be really, really good. And he had that, as well as the charisma and humour. I don't think people realised how good he was. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Andy Edwards in London.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up. to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and the artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Hi, I'm Helen Maroulis, Olympic champion for Team USA, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
A top British Olympic official thinks this year's Tokyo Games will take place, even with the Japanese capital currently under a COVID-19 state of emergency. Joining us now with more details is VOA's Gwen Uden. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. On Tuesday, government officials in Japan announced they would expand its current state of emergency beyond the Tokyo metropolitan area to offset a resurgence in coronavirus cases in the region. The emergency declaration has caused the postponement of upcoming exhibitions of the Olympics torch and raised the question of whether or not the games would take place on schedule this summer. At the start of the new year, Japanese Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga reiterated his promise that preparations for the Tokyo Games would continue as planned. And the Prime Minister's statement was echoed by Mark England, Tokyo 2020 chef de mission for the British Olympic Association. He tells Reuters he's hugely confident the Olympics will start on July 23rd, but says athletes should expect the Games to look very different.
I think it will be a different Games. There are some pressure points that are obvious in the Olympic Games, one being the Olympic Village and travel to and from. So, it's not like an individual sport championship. There isn't the opportunity to create secure bubbles. The theatre of operation across Japan is enormous. 50 world championships taking place in a 17-day period.
England adds that comprehensive protocols will be in place to ensure the health and safety of the athletes.
A Games where we won't necessarily see athletes supporting their teammates in, as we have seen in the past. But everybody is prepared to work through those to ensure that for those athletes in competition, it is the safest possible environment that we can prepare for them.
A recent survey showed 80% of those polled in Japan want to see the games either delayed or canceled completely. But in the wake of the global pandemic, England says the Tokyo Olympics is something the world needs.
The world needs this this celebration. I mean, we are 7-8 months away from the games as we currently speak. So, that is a long time to plan and adjust and to replan. To make sure that not only is it safe, but we can provide everybody back home with some of the messages and celebrations that everybody deserves at this time.
Meanwhile, in his home country, the United Kingdom is under new lockdown rules due to a surge in coronavirus infections. But on Wednesday, Health Secretary Matt Hancock told the BBC that despite the national lockdown, elite sport must continue.
Well, I think elite sport is important again because these are tough times, and being able to watch the football on the telly is really important because there's loads of things that you can't do, and that watching it from the comfort of your own home is a perfectly safe activity.
Fixtures in the Premier League are currently being rearranged because cases of positive infections have disrupted schedules in recent weeks. 5 Premier League matches have been postponed due to COVID-19 since December. Just this week, Aston Villa's home game against Tottenham was called off, and Newcastle, Manchester City, and Fulham have also suffered coronavirus outbreaks and suspended matches. The Premier League has issued a reminder that handshakes, hugs, and high fives are strictly prohibited, but some celebratory gestures have proven to be tough to avoid, and Matt Hancock acknowledges those mandates are difficult to enforce.
I know that the Premier League really think hard about this. You know, it's important that it's carried out in a way that is respectful of the rules. Now, of course, they have special arrangements to ensure that the players are safe and have a testing regime, for instance. But I do think that it's important that everybody respects not just the letter, but the spirit of the rules, because it's actually the spirit of the rules that's important, which is don't pass on the disease, act as if you've got it, and then you won't pass it on to others.
The UK has recorded over 3.1 million COVID cases so far and more than 83,000 deaths, the fifth highest in the world. Matt Hancock is urging all elite athletes to follow guidelines and protocols to help prevent the spread of the virus. And that is all from me, Sonny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uden.
You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
There's been a big trade in the National Basketball Association. The Houston Rockets sent all-star guard James Harden to the Brooklyn Nets. Harden will now team up with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, giving the Nets a big three in their quest to win the NBA title. The AP's Dave Ferry reports the big trade also involved two other NBA teams.
Disgruntled All-Star guard James Harden is joining the Nets following a four-team deal involving the Rockets, Pacers, and Cavaliers. A person who spoke to the Associated Press on condition of anonymity says Harden is leaving the Rockets just a day after saying the team wasn't good enough to beat elite competition.
We're not even close, honestly. To that team, obviously the defending champions, and to just all the other elite teams out there. You can tell the difference in these last two games.
Playing hours after acquiring James Harden, the Nets had four starters and three reserves score in double figures in a 116-109 victory over the Knicks. Kevin Durant pumped in 26 points, and Bruce Brown finished with 15 and 14 rebounds to help the Nets move back over 500 at 7-6. Durant went over 20 points in a franchise record ninth straight game to begin a season.
It's a good win, especially we talked about it last night. We wanted to finish the second half for the back-to-back, and especially with a team that's right across the bridge from us, and we know what that rivalry is like, and we know how the intensity that this team plays with.
Joe Harris also had 15 for Brooklyn, which led just 46-43 before going on a 15-2 run. I'm Dave Ferry.
Thanks, Dave. Meanwhile, Dave Ferry says LeBron James and the defending NBA champion Los Angeles Lakers were big winners on Wednesday night. Dave says the Lakers stormed past the Oklahoma City Thunder.
LeBron James scored 26 points, and the Lakers stayed perfect on the road by ripping the Thunder, 128-99. James delivered 9 points in a 66-second stretch of the third quarter. He made 4 of 6 shots and scored 11 points in the third period to help the Lakers take a 93-71 lead.
Coming out into an arena with no fans, you got to, you know, prosper your own energy from your group and yourself, so... We had to do that today, and our bench was great to start. Our starters did a good job of getting the energy going, and everybody just had a key point in us having energy as a group.
Montrezl Harrell had 21 points, and Anthony Davis added 18 for the Lakers, who have opened the season 7-0 on the road for the first time in franchise history. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander scored 17 points to lead the Thunder, who trailed by 24 in each half. I'm Dave Ferry.
Thanks, Dave. Now let's go to Charlotte, North Carolina, where Latvian player Kristaps Porzingis has made a winning season debut for the Dallas Mavericks. The AP's Gethin Coolbaugh reports.
Kristaps Porzingis provided an instant boost to the Mavericks in his season debut in a 104-93 win over the Hornets. Porzingis had 16 points and 4 rebounds in his first game since August 21st after recovering from a knee injury he suffered in the playoffs.
Oh, good. Finally he's here. I've been working a lot, just coming back from the injury. So, you know, it's always always a good feeling once you actually get there.
Luka Doncic led all scorers with 34 points and had 13 rebounds and 9 assists to help the 6-4 Mavericks win their 4th straight.
The way you win championship is with defense, you know. You got to be the best on the defensive end. If you don't have defense, you're not going to achieve anything. So I think that's why everybody's willing to play defense. Everybody's willing to sacrifice. I think that's the key to our team.
Terry Rozier scored 18 and Gordon Hayward had 16 for 6-6 Charlotte in a game the Hornets never led and trailed by as many as 22 points. I'm Gethin Coolbaugh.
Up the January 14th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.